You didn't get to have your giant hot dog.
I did.
Oh, you did? You went and got your giant hot dog?
Yeah.
Was the giant hot dog a sandwich?
Some people might say that.
I don't think a hot dog's a sandwich, just to be on record.
But is a giant hot dog a sandwich?
I think it falls on the sandwich spectrum.
Oh, man. So we're recording, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So
okay.
Should we start?
Yeah.
Doing the actual.
That wasn't the podcast?
I mean, we could talk more about giant hot dogs. I don't mind. We
Hello,
could
Jesse. Giant hot dog.
Hello.
We're joined by Ceci Correa. You are a designer and developer. You work with Girl Develop It in Austin.
Yes, I do.
What else about your bio am I missing?
I also help out the local Rails meetup called Austin on Rails, which I help run with Schneems and Britt Ballard from Thoughtbot Austin. Mm-hmm. And we just had a new member join our team, Yusuf, who has a consultancy called Baron Giraffe, which is like the greatest name for a consultancy ever. So shout out to the team.
Cool. We were having a conversation at lunch yesterday, which actually prompted the we should talk more about this on the podcast, because we were sitting down talking about hiring and then you came over and sat down. You're like, I'm actually doing a panel on hiring. And everybody was like, what? And I went to the panel yesterday and it was good. It was entertaining. It's interesting because I'm always like, oh, I have thoughts on that. And I'm like, I want to. Nope, it's not my turn to talk. Can't talk.
Yeah. It was interesting because whenever I would bring up to people that I was doing a panel on hiring practices, everybody had feelings about it. And pretty much everything that everyone brought up, I was like, yep, I'm going to bring that up as well. And unfortunately, I got through maybe about a third of all the questions that I wanted to get through. You always think you're going to have more time, but it just goes by so fast, especially when you're doing a panel. So yeah, I was a little bummed that, you know, I really wanted to talk about things like unconscious bias. But we didn't even get to that. We barely got to talking about things like gender gap in hiring and stuff. So,
well, at least you had too much content and not too little.
Yes.
We've been talking about hiring on the show actually a decent amount lately because I've been doing some hiring for our Boston office and also like screening candidates for some of our other offices. And it's a different skill than anything I've ever done before. And like I've interviewed people before and I feel like that's okay. But the screening of the candidates part is like part of me just wants to give everybody the benefit of the doubt and be like, if you could fill out this application in a reasonable manner and like submit a code sample that we ask for, then like, yeah, we'll talk to you. But then like step one in our process is talking to our CEO. It's like,
oh, wow.
Maybe I need to be a little more selective about that.
Yeah.
It's like we do like a non-technical like, hey, this is what ThoughtBot's about. What are you about? And like kind of try and balance that out a little bit and make sure that there's a good fit there. And, you know, just like found myself just ultimately being like, I'm probably overburdening Chad's schedule a little bit more than I need to.
What really fascinates me about the hiring process, and you're kind of bringing that up, is that each person, whenever they take it on, they have to learn it from scratch. And I think that's really interesting in our industry because our industry is kind of obsessed with setting best practices and standards. And we try to follow that in the actual work that we do, and we don't have anybody trying to set standards or guidelines and best practices for hiring. Each company does it differently, each manager does it differently, and everybody that starts doing it, they just kind of have to learn their style. And I don't know, I find that interesting that like, why don't we have better standards or, you know, I don't know, a better sort of like knowledge share around these types of things?
The previous company I worked for, we did like, we would have candidates come in and we had a team maybe of like five developers or so. And we would pair up and then interview, like we'd do two people interviewing one candidate and then like they would meet with another two people and then maybe like my boss. And so they would have like three or four interviews of like a half an hour to 45 minutes each. And I never knew what to do. Nobody told me what to do. Nobody was like, here's how you interview somebody. So I'd be like looking at their resume. I'd be like, tell me about your work at Acme Corp. And they'd be like, well, I did this. It says it on the resume. Interesting. And then it just boiled down to whether or not I liked talking to them.
Mm-hmm.
It was ultimately, and like I had made my mind up within, I don't know, a minute usually. Like,
yeah.
And it was just like, I don't know what I'm doing. And then like it feels wrong. It almost feels wrong of me because I'm just basing it off of, like you said before, the implicit biases I have about like what I think that conversation should go like in the first 30 seconds, basically.
Yeah.
But now when I came to Thoughtbot, they have a much more like, here's the process. And we do like a non-technical interview, and then we do a pairing interview. And like the non-technical interview is very like every person gets the same set of questions, and it like gives us a constant like bar to measure people against. So I at least really liked that, because there's like, this is what you ask people. And, you know, there's still like a little bit of like, you can't just ask them a question and then they struggle with it and you're like, okay, we're going on to the next question. Like, it's like a conversation you have to have with
yeah,
people.
That's actually something that I really liked about the Thoughtbot hiring process, because I actually interviewed for an apprenticeship position a couple of years back, and I ended up getting an offer before I even finished the process with Thoughtbot. But when I was doing the technical portion, it was like an interview. It wasn't a sit here and code in front of me. Like a lot of companies are doing that, especially if they're remote. They'll give you, you know, the, I don't know, some sort of code challenge over Screen Hero or something where they watch you code and you have to sort of like sit there. If you're on the phone, you have the phone on your shoulder and you're like coding on the computer. Or if, you know, if they are using something like a Google Hangout, then you're on Google Hangout and then also trying to do this thing. And I found that process really awkward. They want you to talk as you code in like this Google Hangout, whereas the Thoughtbot interview was, guide me through how you would build this. And it was more of a conversation. And I felt that was a much like much more productive way.
Right.
Have you ever done the Pivotal Labs process?
I have not.
Because it's an interesting contrast. Because I do like the other nice thing about the Thoughtbot technical interview, too, is that it you can't really study for it because there's not really right answers. There are a couple of questions where there are very specifically wrong answers, but Pivotal has an interesting one as well, because they tried to come up with a technical for the after the initial phone screen, they tried to come up with something that they could give consistently and like grade people on a scale. So you build a set in Java, pairing with the interviewer. And it doesn't matter if you know Java or not, because the interviewer basically drives, and it's just looking at, because they pair full time, so A, pairing skills, how well you're able to explain through things, and the tests are there, or at least the spec is there, and then you TDD it, but it was an interesting one just because they give that exact technical portion to every single person. They have a scale, they have the specific things that they're looking for, and it's one that I feel like the interviewer can be much more interchangeable just because it is so practiced and documented. And I found that interesting. I don't necessarily know that I agree with the specific content of it, but I thought what they were going for with that interview was interesting. It has a similar, it's not one that you can necessarily study for, because it's not about how to implement a hash set. Like, you implement it on top of an array. You know, it's about making sure there's no duplicates inside of it, not like algorithms. It's just basic problem solving.
I think that's actually really, really interesting concept. It sounds like their sort of technical interview mimics how you would actually do the work. And I feel like that's a huge missing piece from a lot of the technical interviews that I see out there. You know, they have you whiteboard, they have you work on really abstract sort of coding challenges that don't actually reflect the work that you're going to be doing. And it's, like I said, if you're coding in like a Google Hangout, it's a little awkward. Like, they don't always do a good job of mimicking your actual work.
Yeah.
Well, in the real world, if you ever actually need to put on the computer science hat and pull out an algorithm to solve a problem, which happens on rare occasion, right? But you actually need to know the algorithm or how to implement it. You need to know when you would need that algorithm, but then you can pull up the Wikipedia page
exactly.
for it.
Exactly.
Right.
Like, oh, I know, I need a binary search for this. Let me go look up how to implement a binary search. It's just interesting that we look for, like, do you have this algorithm memorized, but never do you know when to apply it?
And at that point, all you're doing is testing whether someone has memorized something.
Right.
Whereas I think that in other processes, especially if it's a process where, like, you can't really study for, then, you know, it tests more your problem-solving skills, your communication skills. And I think that's much more valuable than other types of things that I see out there.
So how do you feel about the full-day pairing interview?
I think that's fine. Yeah, I think I've never been part of something like that, but I think that that's a really great way of getting a feel for, you know, whether you would work well with a certain person,
right,
and then really get a feel for the way that they would problem solve, which I think is like really, really important.
Yeah.
There's been cases too where, like, from an employer side, there's been cases where, like, somebody comes in and they, like, really do well on a technical interview because they're really well read on a topic. Mm-hmm. But then when it's like, okay, now let's do the thing that we were talking about and we're doing it together, and then you're like, oh, you know about this, but you haven't done it, which is okay, but like it's an entirely different, like that's not the impression I got from just talking to you about it. The reverse is also true. Like there's often times where I'm interviewing somebody and I'm not quite sure if their answers are maybe like a little scatterbrained or a little not coherent because they're nervous or because they don't know it. And it's like, if somebody's on that fence, again, I try to give people like, I'm like, well, let's do the benefit of the doubt kind of thing. Because if you have that whole day of pairing and you're going to pair, like in our setup, you would pair with somebody for like 4 hours and pair with somebody else for like 3 hours. Within that 4 hours, you would hope that eventually the nerves would kind of like subside and you'd be able to have a different look at it. Like you shouldn't be so nervous, because there's times when I'm just like, and after having done a number of these technical interviews, I can kind of tell that like, I think that those stumbles early were because they were nervous and they weren't really clear where this was going. And like, you know, they were nervous about what the follow-up questions were going to be and things like that. So I think it just gives you need multiple ways to judge candidates along the way.
Yeah.
I think you're also hitting on something really important, which is the time commitment that you're asking from the candidates. I think generally, you know, a full day gives you the best perspective on someone. But at the same time, I feel like it can be difficult for certain people if they are already employed, especially if they have to travel out of town for a certain interview and, you know, they also have a family. Like you're asking for a lot of time from someone. And it's not only just if you ask for a full day of interview time. I've been in some processes where it was a 7-week process.
Oh, gosh.
And I essentially had a call with someone each week for like, you know, 30 minutes, 40 minutes. You always tend to go a little over if you're having a good conversation. So like in total, you know, it was quite a few weeks, and each time they wanted to do a call. And I got to a point where I was like, if you are doing this while you are employed, then you have to, you know, juggle your own work schedule to make that work. So you might have to work from home or go out to a coffee shop during your lunch break to be able to have this conversation. And it's like, I don't feel like that company understood what burden they were making their candidates go through for a job, because each time they're like, let's just, you know, they would send me an email and I would be like, oh, hey, I have a quick question. Let's jump on a Google Hangout. And I'd be like, I don't need another Google Hangout.
I just need you to answer this email.
So I had an interesting case towards the end of my time at Thoughtbot, which I'm not sure if it was a really, really good pairing interview or a really, really bad one. Because you know the project I was on towards the end, right?
Yes.
So the person comes in and it's like, cool, so we're building a 3D rendering engine for mobile phones and C++. And the job was not going to involve mobile development or C++ or OpenGL. And the person had never done mobile or C++ or OpenGL. And so, A, I'm glad that person wasn't somebody who had issues with like dealing with pressure. Because if somebody's not good under pressure, that's not going to be a good interview. We didn't end up hiring the person, but I'm not sure if that one's like going to be interesting and give you a really good perspective, because like, okay, so how well do you do in pairing and just working through problems that are language agnostic and talking about your thought process and working just in a crazy environment that you've never seen before? Or is it really bad because it just does not in any way reflect the actual work they're going to be doing?
Well, I mean, you were doing that actual work, so like that,
right.
That does happen.
But like, we wouldn't have taken that project if I wasn't there like and yeah. Saying, yes, I can do this.
Yeah.
I think that is also interesting because, you know, as soon as you say like, hey, you're going to be doing this project on like these three things that like I know nothing about, I know that I would be terrified.
Yeah. Yeah, I would as well. Like I was terrified enough when like during my pairing interview, we had to work on Factory Girl, which I was like, oh, I know that's really like down in the weeds. And, you know, I was pairing with Josh and he's jumping quickly between files. And I'm like, wait, what was that file we just left? Where are we going? What's going on? And I felt like, wow, that was like, I left and I had like a headache. And like, but it was like, it was a good experience. And I was confident that I had done pretty well. But like, that was stressful enough. And I was doing Ruby. So, you know, I think that would be tough. I wanted to get back for one second to the time commitment thing, because I do think that like that's one thing when we work with other teams, sometimes they'll be like, "What can you help us hire people?" And we're like, "All right, well, what are you doing?" And they're like, "Well, we give them this thing and they take home and they have to work on this app." Just like I could see either way, right? So like the take home thing is useful if like you're in a situation where it's really hard for you to get away from work, I guess. But then you're also asking them to spend their own time unpaid to do labor for you. And it's not, you're not going to put this in production, but like, that you're asking them to like basically burn themselves out for a day
But you're asking that with non-take-home as well, right?
I guess, but like then you're... I just much prefer the like come in and spend a day pairing. And I do think like at some level there is a time commitment to trying to get a job. And I think that a day is reasonable, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's close to the upper limit.
You think so? Because I don't think I've ever interviewed for a job that didn't take at least 3/4 of a day of time.
Right. No, I mean, I think that's fine. But getting beyond that, I think, starts to get restrictive, especially since the person's applying for more than one job as well,
yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So if every single one of those, like, well, we want to do a full week of interview stuff. I could see. So Shopify does 2 full days, and it's in person, and we're in Ottawa, which means like they, you know, 2 days for travel as well. And it's just like, I feel like that's a bit too much of a commitment. I could see 2 days being reasonable, which is, you know, can be 1 day if they have to fly out. I feel like much more than that, though, you're going to lose a lot of people because not everybody, like for a full day interview, a lot of people, they take one of their sick days.
Right.
Yep.
It was really useful to me in our process to like, I had other offers already waiting for me, and I was like, okay, but I want to go through this Thoughtbot thing. So I was kind of putting people off, and like, yes, it was an interview of me, but it was equally an interview of whether or not I wanted to work at Thoughtbot, because I was in a position where I could choose, right?
Right, luckily. Absolutely.
So I really appreciated having nearly the full day. I left a little early, but having nearly the full day to like meet almost the entirety of the team, have lunch with people and see like, what do they talk about at lunch? Like, what's this like?
Right.
I don't know.
I think what's interesting too in terms of time commitment, and this is something that I saw some friends of mine struggle with, is, you know, if they have young children at home that they have to care for, it's often harder for people in that situation to spend, you know, 8 hours on a code challenge. And then also, you know, if they're a single parent household, they also have to find childcare while they're out interviewing. So it's one of those things where like I can see both ways. Like, you need the time to be able to vet someone, but at the same time, at what point is too much time too much if you don't happen to have a support system that can help you with things like, you know, childcare, things like that.
So
it's a shame. I don't know. I kind of feel like a full day might be a bit much. And even though like I'm kind of a fan of the coding challenge versus the live sort of coding Google Hangout practice that I've seen a lot lately, with a coding challenge, you can do it the way that you would typically code. You know, you're not in this sort of like false environment. So I tend to like that a little bit more. But I think someone brought this up the other day when I was talking about the hiring panel at RailsConf, is that, you know, if you say, well, you know, we expect someone to finish this in 8 hours, but what is the level of that developer? Like, different developers are going to have likely, you know, different times that, you know, it's going to take them to do it. So that can be a little bit hard. Like, you know, if you're trying to hire a senior, you know, maybe it would take them 4 hours, and someone, you know, not quite at that level, it might take them 8. Someone else, it might take them longer. So it can be sort of hard to determine the time commitment.
And I also think it's hard to say, like, what does done mean? Like, if they gave me a coding challenge that was supposed to take 8 hours, they said, like, you have 8 hours to do this, and I finished it in 3, I'd probably spend the next 5 hours making sure it was like exactly as I wanted it, or like the best thing I could possibly deliver, but that's probably counter to like, especially my job in consulting, like, no, the thing you got done in 3 hours is probably good enough. Like, just like, let's go, let's move on. Like,
and what I think is interesting about that, right now, we are also hiring for a couple of positions at my current job. And we're doing a blind review process where we look at the code first. We don't know their names. We just sort of know their code. And it's really interesting to see the quality of what people submit. Like, for the last job that we hired, the challenge was build an API with 3 endpoints. And several people submitted an API that just, like, the 3 endpoints were gets. Come on. Seriously.
Yeah, I mean, we have that problem too. We don't do a challenge, but we do ask for, like, show me something that you've written that's representative of what you do. Or if you, you know, and sometimes people can't, and we work with them on that. But, like, it's interesting to see, like, sometimes people submit things that, like, they submit me a link to something on GitHub, and I click the thing to go to the thing on GitHub, so they know I'm going to be looking at it in GitHub, and, like, it's got mixed tabs and spaces, so, like, the indentate, like, GitHub gives 8 spaces to a tab, and things are over here. You're like, did you click on the link you sent me? Because, like, I can't read this. Like, what?
Has anybody ever sent you a link to a private repository and just, like, not realized that you wouldn't be able to see it?
No. I don't think so. They usually say they can give me access.
So at my previous job, I was the first pass reviewer. And in this scenario, we weren't doing blind reviews. And we asked for a code sample. And I always thought it was really hilarious when people would literally copy and paste some HTML into the body of the email. Like, here's a code sample. Wow, no, that's not what we were talking about. But I also think it's really interesting. We had some people who'd say like, oh, well, everything that I work on is proprietary, so I don't have anything to show you. Okay. Right. Then I have no way of grading you.
But that, I mean, that is a legitimate
oh, yeah.
thing. Right. Like when I applied to Thoughtbot, I only had one app that I could show them, and that was because I was able to ask the client, hey, is it okay if I show the source code for this? It was an ad agency. But like, and it was not code I was proud of, and I had written much better code since then, but it was the only thing I could get access to because all of the code I had written otherwise was for my job. Like, and I can't just give access to...
Yeah.
And some people will be in jobs where it's easier to do than not, but like there are people who just... I think it's completely reasonable if somebody's not able to produce a code sample of at least not of a real application. It can, you know, hopefully they can maybe point at like an open source commit somewhere, but mm-hmm. even then that's... Then we're self-selecting for people who can work nights and weekends.
Yes.
In those cases, I generally will ask somebody like, I understand you can't give me a full Rails app. Is there like a class that you can send me with a test? Or if not, the final way would be like, okay, you have given me evidence that you are otherwise somebody I want to talk to, but you just can't give me the code sample because you don't feel like it's ethically something you should do.
Right.
Because reasons, or you're worried legal reasons. It's like, okay, can you point to something on GitHub in some open source project that you like or that you want to talk about?
And that's
then
a really good idea.
We'll go from that perspective. And it's like, okay, tell me what you like about it, what you don't like about it, like that kind of thing. And at that point, I would expect more from that person. Like,
yeah.
I would expect them to be really well prepared to talk about the code sample, but. I know we've done that a few times with folks who just really are not comfortable providing.
I mean, I like that one a lot, actually.
Yeah.
I kind of like that one even better than the providing a code sample.
I see that a lot of junior developers also struggle with that, especially I've heard that certain boot camps don't allow their students to like share the work that they've done at the boot camp because it's proprietary and part of their curriculum, which I think is terrible.
It's a disservice to them.
I'm not going to name... which boot camp that was, but that's terrible. Stop doing that. And I'm really passionate about like trying to guide people into like, this is how you get a job in tech, because tech is different than most other industries. And there are people that were saying, because I'm part of a Facebook group where a lot of people post job opportunities in my community. And someone was saying, hey, I'm having a hard time getting noticed. At what point do I just start dropping off resumes at companies? And pretty much everybody was like, do not do that. Like, whatever you do, don't drop off resumes. And what ends up happening is that they don't have code samples that they can produce, or, you know, they might not have enough experience yet because they're junior developers. And one thing that I feel like is a good idea, a good practice, is like, write some blog posts about what you're learning. And obviously, you know, something like blog posts about what you're learning is probably more applicable to a junior developer, but I think that those are super valuable because they show your thought process and they show that you can communicate things that are technical.
Right. And they often they also show like, I tried this and I got this problem and here's the next step I took and I next step and the next step and that's how I resolved it. And it, like, that's the job. Right? Like,
yeah.
There's so much of the job that's like, if you are the type of person who gets an error and then throws your hands up and says like, I got an error, it doesn't work, then like, I can't work with that. But if you're the type of person who will A, get the error, read the error, figure out what the problem is, take small steps to progress forward, and then also write about it at the end and communicate what you have done, then that's basically the entire job.
Yeah.
So
they'll have good documentation.
Write blog posts. Yeah, I did want to talk about, because we've been talking about like from the hiring person perspective, like from the person trying to get a job's perspective, like particularly I don't think senior developers have a problem getting a job these days, so like let's not talk about them. But like, because you say you work with a lot of people trying to find jobs in tech, like what do you tell them beyond the blog post thing or like having a code sample? How do you tell them to stand out in the crowd of people that are applying for these jobs?
There are a lot of things, because it also depends on your personality. some people are really good at going to meetups, meeting people, handing out business cards, you know, doing that whole networking thing. Mm-hmm. And some people, that's not their personality. So I feel like a lot of people try to, you know, give like a one size fits all answer, where they'll say, go to meetups, just network, network. And yeah, not everybody has that type of personality. So I feel like it's a mix of both. And then there are a lot of people who say blog, blog, blog. And again, if that's not your thing, then what can you do? And I feel like, again, it's a mix of both, especially if you're starting out. And to go back to that idea of like, I'm not getting noticed when I submit an application, I'm just going to start going in person. If you're not getting noticed when you're submitting an application, what does your online presence look like? Can I Google you and find out who you are? You know, is your LinkedIn
linked
up to date? And maybe if you're just starting out as a junior developer, maybe not, but you could fill it up with volunteering opportunities. You can add projects now. You can LinkedIn is no longer just like a list of your jobs. You can add a lot more things to it. Again, is your GitHub up to date? Is it pruned? A lot of people just have like a lot of test things, a lot of things that they forked.
You can specifically choose which repositories show up on your profile page now. So,
and you know, a lot of people just, you gotta love your GitHub profile. You gotta give it some love. You gotta go prune it and make sure that when someone looks you up on GitHub, that they are able to see quickly the things that you want them to see. There's even people, and I don't recommend this, you can like go and hack it. And like there was someone that spelled hire me on their like contribution board.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, I'm not going to do that.
That's kind of funny.
But yeah, that's kind of fun. So I feel like, again, it's a combination of write some blog posts, make sure that you have a portfolio page. A lot of my classmates, because I went to a boot camp a couple of years ago, and a lot of my classmates who were having a hard time finding jobs, they're like, oh, I haven't gone around to building my personal page. And I'm like, well, how do you expect someone, especially if you're a junior developer with, you know, no projects under your belt, and you don't have a personal website?
Well, but what do they put on there if they don't have any projects?
They're apparently just sending, you know, filling out applications and sending out empty resumes. I don't know. And it would always just really shock me. Like, you're looking for jobs. You should have a web page. And this also happened when I was a first pass reviewer at my previous job. We would get applications from recent engineering CS graduates from whatever university, and they didn't have anything, not even a personal website. So it makes it really hard for an employer to get a sense of who you are as an applicant. So
well, isn't that what LinkedIn and GitHub and everything else we just listed are for? Like, I'm honestly curious.
Some people don't even have that. Some people have nothing.
Well, I mean, definitely you gotta have something. But it's like, it feels like a personal webpage is almost redundant these days, because there is a place to document. Like I said, you can put your projects on LinkedIn, or you may not have projects. You have GitHub.
Yeah.
Right.
If you're a designer, you have Dribbble, you have Behance. Like, there's definitely, you know, if you don't want to have a personal website, just put your work somewhere where it can be seen.
Right. I mean, your personal website could just be, here's a link to my GitHub, here's a link to my LinkedIn, here's a link to my Dribbble page.
Sure.
Whatever the case may be. The other thing I think that really, like, because I have talked to people who are like, I submit these applications. I'm like, well, what are you submitting in these? Like, in the hiring panel, we talked a lot about, like, you know, the people on the panel talked a little bit about job descriptions and how to write job descriptions and stuff, which is a great thing. And like, we, as people who have jobs to fill, we need to do a good job of explaining, like, what is it actually like to work here, right? When you submit an application, you need to give me an impression about what it's like to work with you, right? And like, do something that tells me you spent some time like reading the job description, maybe figuring out what the company does, what they're about, and how that lines up with what you think you do really well. And just stand out from that perspective, because so many applications we get are just like, they filled out the form and they fill it out in the same way they fill out every form. And I understand that, like, you're trying, like, especially as a junior developer, it's hard to find jobs, so you're applying for a lot of them, but like, You have to stand out somehow. And one relatively easy way to stand out is to spend the time to care.
And that's,
write a cover letter.
Yeah. Right. And that's actually, that brings me up to a really interesting point. I'm a really big fan of the cover letter. Yeah. And at my previous job, just going to give them a shout out, for Kitchens Consultancy. And well, they used to be based out of Austin, Texas. Now they're remote. They have some really great hiring practices. That's kind of where I got a lot of my ideas for what to ask on the panel. And one of the things that they were really big about was write us a thoughtful cover letter, because again, this is going to give us an insight into who you are, to the point where if someone submitted a resume and they didn't send us a cover letter, it was practically a no automatically, because we wanted to know about them. And also, can you follow instructions? If we say that we want a cover letter and you don't send one, then you can't follow instructions. So I'm a big fan of cover letters, but I've heard from other recruiters that, oh, we just don't read them. So, and I was a little bit shocked.
I almost never read the resume. I definitely read the cover letter.
Yeah, I think
I'll glance at the resume and be like, all right, they had some experience. Yeah. And then like, I want to know, like, we don't specifically ask for a cover letter, but we ask like basically two questions, which is like, what's it going to be like for us to work with you? And send us something from your profile or something, you know, like either your design profile or or some code or something. And the number of people who answer that first question with like, it'll be great. Right? It's like, right, well, tell me a little bit more, like spend some time and
you should just take them on their word. It'll be great. It's fine.
And what I think is interesting about that, like, I'm a big fan of the cover letter. I'm a big fan of like, tell us who you are. What do you like to do in your own free time? We're not going to judge you by what you like to do, but we just want to know who you are. And I know that a lot of people are a little bit put off when companies ask, like, you know, outside of tech, what do you like to do? And a lot of people just don't really like that question. I'm curious what you all think about that.
I mean,
I wouldn't think that they were trying to determine how to hire me. I would think they were just trying to have a conversation, and then I would just have a conversation about what I like to do. I don't know. I guess I might feel pressured to say like, I love to develop. I write open source gems in my spare time. Like, I'm always in front of my computer, but I don't know. I'm a little further along in my career, so I can, from my position of privilege here, I can just say like, I spend time with my kids and I coach the baseball team and the soccer team, and that's what I really like to do. And I get away from my computer when I can. And if that's not okay, if like, no, you have to be on call for this job, then that just doesn't fit what I can do. And we're fine. Like, let's walk away from this. And I'm not what you want. You're not what I want. But as somebody who's like just trying to get in the industry, you have to be a little less choosy and be like, I don't really want to be on call, but I guess I have to be. And so saying something like that might kind of disqualify you, I guess.
I mean, I would worry. If somebody was asking me a lot about what I do outside of work, I would worry that that means that they're trying to hire too much for culture fit.
Yes.
And all of the baggage that comes along with that. So I would take it as a bit of a turnoff, just because I don't know that what I do outside of work is terribly relevant to applying for a job.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good thing that a lot of people in the industry are starting to realize, that asking for things like that, thinking in terms of culture, it keeps you hiring the same person over and over again. And this is something that I experienced previously, where, you know, the culture at this agency where I used to work out was very heavy into like craft beer drinking and playing tabletop games.
Right.
And we ended up hiring a lot of people that were into that. And they were all great developers, don't get me wrong, but it keeps you hiring the same person.
Right.
And that's something that later on, I sort of like woke up to that fact that, oh, yeah, it sounds good in theory, but it's not really so good. And I know that it turns off other people, especially women, because it puts you in that position of having like, do I lie and say that I also like to drink beer and play video games? And
how many Star Wars quotes do you have to make during your
career? Yeah.
One thing that I really liked about Shopify when I was applying, when I was looking just through like their perks. Because, you know, you go to most startups and you see, we have a kegerator. And which, if a company has a kegerator, that means that they want you at the office after work hours.
Yes.
For one. But, like, Shopify's perks were things like cleaning service for your home and bonus if you have a kid and really generous parental leave. And it's just the perks are going to very, very much influence the type of applicants you get. And I think those kind of perks are going to attract a much more well-rounded group of people. And I remember just being like, I think I will find more people there that I'm interested in working with than I would if it was we have tabletop games and kegerator.
Yeah, that's a great point. Especially, it was one of our panelists yesterday at our hiring panel. Her name is Heather. She said something along the lines of, hey, we just got this new kegerator and nobody is applying to our job. But I did want to take a second to talk about a little bit of like what it feels like from a female perspective to see those sorts of things, like, oh yeah, we have a kegerator, we have a ping pong table, like, you know, that tells you that it's a very specific culture. And that sometimes turns women from applying to a job because they feel like, well, I'm just not going to fit. And sometimes that can be disheartening. But what I like to tell fellow women that are in that position is like, you're interviewing those companies as much as they are interviewing you. So if you don't feel like the culture is going to be a good fit for you, you know, just walk away from that. You are just as free. And you know, and that's a tough thing to have to say to someone, especially if they're females just getting started into tech. But I don't know, I take it from that perspective of also, you know, you are interviewing this company as well for the culture. And if you feel like it's not going to be very inclusive for you, better that you find out now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think, like, I don't want to say that, like, if you're the type of company that has a foosball table and a ping pong thing, like, that means you only hire people who really like to play foosball and play ping pong. Like, that can be your culture now, as long as you're open to, like, somebody else coming in and being like, well, I don't like to do any of that stuff. I like to leave at 5 o'clock or 4:30. I get here at 8:30, I leave at 4:30, and that's what I do.
I think it's important to project that, like, you're open to...
Right.
That's not just people who are going to hang around after work drinking beer and playing ping pong.
Right. And, like, there was an article that was making the rounds yesterday that I have read part of, and we'll put a link to the show notes because I was really... I liked the premise, but it was basically that we should stop talking about culture fit and start talking about, like, chemistry, because chemistry is about combining different elements, right?
I like that.
And culture is, like, kind of has this homogenous nature to it.
I was just talking about that this morning with Justin, one of our other panelists, and I was telling him how, you know, it's sometimes a team works really well, and it's not necessarily because of the individual pieces, it's because of the individual pieces put together.
Right.
And a lot of people don't always realize that.
Right.
Yeah.
If as a consultancy we hired all of like the really best Ruby developers in the world, but they weren't perhaps like the best interpersonal communicators in the world, like we'd have a really good development team if you like put them in a room and said like, here's the requirements, develop this thing.
Yeah,
but that's only part of the job, a small part of the job. Like we need to have a balanced, like some of our people are like, they know where the bodies are buried in Rails, right? And they like they know how to get down in those weeds, and some of the people just aren't that type of person, but they're really strong in other areas, and having a balance of all those skills on your team, so it's important.
And I think a bit of a, I don't know if this qualifies as a catch-22, but it's definitely a thing, is that when you talk about like putting all these pieces together and assembling a team, a lot of the times that will also keep you from hiring diversely, because if you don't think about it in the right way, you're going to want to go for, well, these people click and that's why we want to sort of like assemble this type of team. And I don't necessarily think that there is one solution or that we've cracked it yet, but I think that's interesting, is that you are still trying to assemble the best possible team with the best chemistry while at the same time trying to bring in different voices to the table, and that can definitely be a challenge.
Yeah. And the bringing different voices thing, like that, this is the first time I've been involved in the process early enough that it wasn't just like I'm interviewing whoever somebody said we're interviewing, right? And I do that. But now it's like trying to attract candidates and things like that. So like I have to do things that I'm not like I'm totally comfortable walking up to people that I already know who have the same interests as me or whatever, and being like, hey, I think you should work with us because I have firsthand knowledge that you do really good work, etc. But like I have people in my extended network who I don't talk to as regularly. I don't know. Maybe we tweet back and forth a couple of times, right? And I have to kind of like do the thing where I'm like, all right, I'm going to be a recruiter. Here I go. Like I'm going to send them an email, because I just have to like, I have to get out of my comfort zone to try and attract like those types of people, because my comfort zone will attract the people that I usually, you know, associate with, I guess, which, you know, it's a pretty sketchy crowd. but it's just saying like paying more attention to doing things that you maybe aren't doing. Like recently I went to I can't remember the name of the event, but like a tech recruiting event where like you pay some company money and a bunch of candidates come in. And I was pretty sure,
like speed dating, but
yes,
for
exactly.
Employers.
Yes. And I was pretty sure it was going to be bad. And
was it?
It was bad. But like I tried it, right? And I was very uncomfortable with it, and there was nobody that was a good fit for what we were looking for. But like I tried it, and now I know that didn't work, right? So from an employer perspective, just trying to try as many things as possible to find the people that are out there. And like the other thing we found is like, instead of, if we do identify somebody that we're like, we would like this person to apply, not saying like, hey, I'd really like you to apply, but saying like, hey, I think you'd be a really good teammate here. Why don't I go ahead and set up a meeting with Chad, and you can talk to him about like what it's like to work here, and you know, you can just see if it's a fit, rather than being like, you should apply. Because even if the answer is like, yeah, I should apply to that job. It's like, I should apply to that job. Let me get my stuff together. I've got to get this together.
And then you're not going to do
it. And then they're not going to do it because they already have a job. Right? Like,
yeah. No, that is literally what is happening to me right now. There is someone that I absolutely feel like would be a great addition to our team. And I, you know, sent him a link and I was like, hey, please apply. And unfortunately, I can't just set up a coffee with like one of our members over the team because we're a large company and we kind of have this bureaucracy and have to go through, you know, you have to submit an application, which is a shame. But yeah, it's hard to sort of convince someone that you're like, oh, I know you'd just be so good here, but you're already employed, damn it.
I remember when I was trying to come work for Thoughtbot, I had a networking connection to Desi. So I reached out and, you know, tried to network my way into advancing through the process. And then she was just like, yeah, you should submit an application. That'll be that'll
get you in the process. You're like, oh, okay.
Before we wrap up, is there any other burning topics that you wanted to talk about?
One last thing that I wanted to mention is that a lot of people don't always think about diversity of background where they're considering candidates. And I also think that that should be a consideration. It's not just about, you know, diversity of, you know, whether you're a minority or whether you're a woman or LGBTQ. It's also about like, what is your background? Maybe there's someone out there that falls within the status quo category, but, you know, they have an interesting different background that they can bring something else to the table. And so I think that, yeah, diversity of background is also really important, especially in tech, because not everybody has a CS degree nowadays.
Right.
So you would have like, it's important to have people who do maybe have a CS background or people who have a different college degree that's totally off the wall, like fine arts, or don't have a college degree at all and taught themselves how to do whatever. Just having a diversity of that, education being one of those areas that can be an interesting background and is often easily discoverable, right? But, you know, there's also all sorts of different other stories that people have in their background that inform the way that they are and also just the way they approach solving problems, and having a diversity of like ways to approach solving a problem is really interesting.
So we solved it.
Yeah, we're done. Between the panel and this, you know, conversation here, that's it.
Is your company hiring? Do you want to do a plug?
Yeah, we are actually hiring. We are looking for a front-end developer with an emphasis on React. And we are looking for a back-end developer. So just check out returnpath.com/careers and you should be able to see what we're hiring for. Especially if you're based out of Austin, come work with me.
Yeah, and get that personal webpage shining.
Love your GitHub.
Thoughtbot hiring, Derek? I don't know if you've ever mentioned that before.
You know, I don't know. We may or may not be still looking for developers by the time this is published.
Shopify is also hiring all of the things if you're interested in moving to Canada. We have lawyers that help you do that.
All right, cool. Thanks, Ceci.
Thank you.
Show notes for this episode can be found at bikeshed.fm/115. Thanks very much, and we'll see you next time.